right now. Wind from the south at 13, 67 degrees under a good cloud cover at 10 past 8. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. The Morning Show with Greg Berg, next. Support for the Morning Show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. Support also comes from Jack Andrea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Jack Andrea, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Tuesday Morning Show on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg, and we're going to be spending most of the hour with Jack Rose, a very good friend to the Morning Show, and someone who has appeared frequently on the program to talk about the important topic of mental illness. This is the Mental Illness Awareness Week, and so it is an important opportunity for us to draw attention to NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and Jack Rose is co-president of the Kenosha County chapter, and they do work on several different fronts involving mental illness, trying to generate new and more widespread awareness of and sensitivity to the issues surrounding mental illness, and also advocating for laws to be passed that make more effective support and treatment possible, and of course also work tirelessly to support those for whom this is a difficult and even grim reality in their lives. Jack Rose, we welcome you back to the Morning Show.
Thank you very much, Greg. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate the opportunity.
I'm glad we can have you here once again to talk about the important work of NAMI on the local level. And I know that we'll talk about it again before our time is up, but I know you have a big event, a big fundraiser that is coming up on this weekend that we want to draw some attention to. Tell our listeners about that.
Sure. We'll be having our annual fundraiser, and once again, Tenuta's Delicatessen, the Tenuta family, and all their customers have been fantastic through all these years. So we'll be there 3203 52nd Street, Friday, October 6th, from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. And also Caitlin Ray, Miss Kenosha 2017, will be joining us during that time on Friday. And Caitlin's platform is mental health awareness, so we're really looking forward to that. Saturday, October 7th, we'll be there from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Sunday, October 8th, from 10 a.m. to 2. We will also be out at Richter's Marketplace, 600 North Lake Drive, Twin Lakes, from Friday, October 6th, from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m., and on Saturday, October 7th, from noon until 5 p.m. Just to let our listeners know that we're an all-volunteer organization. We've been in existence since 1983, and so we are always welcoming donations. And this would be a great time, and you could send those donations to NAMI, Kenosha County, P.O. Box 631, Kenosha 53141.
Very good. And as we're going to explore before the hour is up, the work of NAMI is on several different fronts, so there are all kinds of different things that you are doing all of the time. And, of course, it's such a commendable mission, and it is very much worthy of our support. Jack Rose, we've talked about this before, but let's at least briefly remind our listeners why this is such a deeply important and personal issue for you.
Well, we have two adult children who have lived with mental illness. And it starts back with our daughter when she was 16, and she is now 45. And she was hospitalized at 16 and went through that. At that time, we did not know very much, nothing, in fact, about NAMI. And then we had another occurrence in 1999 when our son had a breakdown. And he had just recently graduated from University of Wisconsin. He was on the dean's list, track team. And he had a breakdown. And so that started our journey with the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Mm. It's been our safety net at that time. We're trying to pay back. And now I should say our son's going to be celebrating his 42nd birthday coming up here on the 4th of October. Mm.
So for both of your adult children, it has been a long journey, I'm sure, with lots of difficulties, but I know it's a journey about which you, for the most part, feel very positive. I mean,
yes.
They are two examples of people living with mental illness, and at least to some extent, surmounting the limitations that it might impose, and are really a source of pride for you, and a source of hope for
yes.
anybody where they might receive this kind of diagnosis, or this diagnosis is given to somebody that they love.
Correct.
So, tell us a little bit about the experience of transferring kind of your private, personal concerns about mental illness to this intense work which you've given for so many years to NAMI. It sounds like from what you described that you first turned to NAMI in a sense as a client, or I mean as
exactly.
Looked to them for help. And then talk about the place and time when it became more than that for you. It also became a vehicle by which you could do work on this important area.
Well, I think we really dedicated our lives, you might say 100%, in a volunteer capacity. When I actually retired in 2006, my wife retired, I believe, 3 years later, registered nurse. Mm. And so that has allowed us the time and the opportunity to do this. And I think as we go through this journey, and the people that we help, that makes it all worthwhile. It really is. And I think in today's environment, I think the number of people that we have coming to our support sessions that we provide are increasing. The number of calls that we're receiving on a daily basis is going up. And so it gives you a good presence that we can help people. And I think over the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, I think we have established a very strong network in Kenosha County that we can use to help people. Because as you know, it's not easy to navigate the mental health system. And so if we can help people do that, that's what it's all about. And so we continue to do that.
We're speaking with Jack Rose, who is co-president of the Kenosha County chapter of NAMI, which is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, the most important organization, certainly in the United States, that deals with issues in and around mental illness. And this first week in October is Mental Illness Awareness Week. So, Jack Rose, let's talk about kind of the three areas of focus for NAMI, and each one, of course, is tremendously important. And I'm glad that the first of the three on your list is that of education, because, of course, that speaks very directly to what something like Mental Illness Awareness Week is all about. Obviously, a very, very important facet of what you do is trying to make more and more people aware of mental illness and understanding really what it's about. What are the most important ways in which NAMI tries to carry out this work, especially on a local level?
Well, I think one of the key programs is our Family to Family program. Now, this is a 12-week program that's for family members and loved ones of people that are living with a mental illness. Mm. Because a big aspect there is you do not have to go through this alone. And having experienced this as a parent, the parents, if your child or relative is diagnosed, you probably need as much help as the individual does. So one of our key programs is our Family to Family program. As I said, it's a 12-week program. This will be starting on January 9th, and it runs through March 27th. We have two locations, one at the county building out on Highway 50 and Highway 45, and one at the job center on Sheridan Road. These classes run from 6:30 to 9 p.m. every Tuesday for 12 weeks. And so we have a page on our website, namikenosha.org. You can hit the button, and you can go ahead and enroll in the class. To give you an idea why we have these two locations, in 2017, we had 26 people complete at the job center, and in we also had 12 complete at the county building. So with the size of that class, that's 38 people that got through it. That's too many for one class with the intensity that you go through. So we have a great team that provide this. Dick Gunther, Lisa Zanin, they can give a clinic on this. And we have some great support. So that's key.
So what gets taught in this course? I mean, what is the primary focus?
The primary focus are different things that can help out individuals. You get really into what mental illness is, the different aspects of it, where we are currently in R&D, what some of the medication, what some of the coping skills are for the individuals. You get some examples of what is available in the community, and you really get into the nuts and bolts of mental illness. And I think a big thing about it is that you have these people, whether it's 26 people in a room or 12 people in a room, you have each of those folks sharing their story. And within that group, you see that they are not alone. So we try to give them a better toolkit with respect to just knowledge, mental health awareness about what's going on with their loved one.
Right. I know that one of the things you are especially proud of is the local chapter of NAMI's development of crisis intervention team training, which involves reaching out to, for instance, local police.
Correct.
And helping to equip them to deal more effectively with someone who might be suffering from mental illness of one kind or another, perhaps in the throes of some kind of episode.
Right.
Tell the listeners a little bit more about the kind of training which we are talking about, and maybe a little bit about some of the strategies that can be very helpful for somebody who suddenly finds themselves in a potentially very difficult or even dangerous situation.
I think it's been developed over the years. It's a key program. Initially, 2007, we would send our law enforcement to either Appleton or Racine to get the program. Since 2010, we have the program right here. We have a contract with Gateway right here, the Kenosha campus, and we use one of their rooms, and it's just been a well-working collaborative effort in the Kenosha Sheriff's Department, Kenosha Police Department, Human Services. And so what we try to give the law enforcement is, again, a better in-depth idea of mental health. I mean, they're not psychiatrists, they're not psychologists, but if we can improve their toolkit, we have Dr. David Mays, who comes down. He's probably one of the noted psychiatrists in the state, and comes down, and he's like the keynote on the first day. And then we have different people from the area, and we get into Alzheimer's, and we get into different areas of mental illness. We have Dr. Eileen Abrams, who comes down, and she is a psychologist at, I believe now, five prisons in the Milwaukee area. She gives an excellent presentation on mental health for young people from birth till 20. And you can see the different environments in which they grow up and how that impacts them. and you wonder about all this trauma and post-traumatic stress, et cetera, et cetera. We also have our In Our Own Voice presenter come in. Our coordinator, Adalia Shirosky, gives a presentation with Dick Gunther, generally, about living with a mental illness and a family member of mental illness, because many times the police are talking with the family member when they get the call. So this is a dynamic that we try to put out there. And I think one of the key pieces, after you go through all these presentations, the last day we do role plays. We do role plays where the officers, generally in pair of two, are into a situation, whether it's an apartment setting or whether it's in a along a street, and how they react, how they do. And then right after the episode, I don't know, 10 minutes maybe, 12 minutes, then they're debriefed on their actions and how they did. And this, it really works. It really works. And so to date now, we've had 216 law enforcement go through there. And we'll have our most recent class was in May 15th to the 19th of this year, and we'll have another class coming up in the probably the May timeframe in 2018. And the local law enforcement have been very, very supportive of this. And it's interesting. Right now, we have two members of the NAMI board, Officer Jeff Wombolt from the Kenosha PD and Officer Kelly Andrick from the Parkside PD. And they both went through it, and now they serve on our board.
Very good. What is this crisis intervention partner training that you also have listed? Is that a similar kind of thing?
Yeah, it's actually a spinoff from the five-day course, the crisis intervention partner two-day course, and it's kind of like the next level of people that are apt to be involved with people that are in mental health crisis. And this is like your ER staff, your social workers, your school teachers, your maintenance people, your dispatchers. It's also available for parents that would want to come through it. And this has been extremely effective. And we do two classes of this a year, generally February and November. We've had 694 people go through this since 2010, and now our next class is coming up Monday and Tuesday, November 20th and 21st, and so far we have 41 people filled up. I've signed up, and we top it off at 60, and if any of the listeners out there are interested, please contact Molly Meager right here at Gateway at 564-3180.
I know that something else you're excited to talk about is something that's, I think, been going on for a bit, which is a means of using, I suppose, in a sense, the tools of theater to tell this story, namely with a presentation called Ending the Silence.
Right. And this is really, I think, been very effective. We're trying to expand that circle of care. You know, we start with CIT, with the law enforcement, then we go CIP, now we go Ending the Silence. And Lisa Zanin, our co-president, her husband Mark, have been very effective in bringing this team together. They're both retired professional teachers, and so they know what it's like dealing with children. And so we, over the last 2 years, we've touched over 2,100 students and staff at KUSD. And right now, for the current school year, we're going to have a presentation at Tremper on October 3rd and 4th. And we're also reaching out to Indian Trail in November and Bradford in January 8th through 9th. And what it consists of, it's a team. It's a team. We find it most effective to go into health classes, smaller group, and you have a lead. You talk about NAMI. You have another individual that tells their story of what it's like living with mental illness, and then we also show a short video. So it's been very effective, and it's amazing in that setting how many students have come up and said, you're talking about me, and I think I need some help. So then we try to make that link.
That really underscores that underscores the importance of doing this kind of work. I know there are a couple other things also to talk about in terms of the work that NAMI does in this field of educating the public and trying to develop deeper awareness. What are a couple of the other means by which you do this work?
I think three things I'd like to touch on. One is our Walkabout Rewards Program. This started about 4 years ago, and it's a collaborative effort between NAMI and Rogan's Shoes out in the interstate. And so it started with a small support group, and you may or may not know, but people living with a mental illness have a life expectancy of about 25 years shorter than folks without. It's so important to get into some kind of physical activity. The many side effects of the drugs that are taken, the comorbidity. Many people with mental illness have more leaning towards diabetes. And so we're trying to get the people to walk. And so with that, we have 30 sessions of walking. They're logged, and they keep track. Then that individual or group of individuals goes out to Rogan's Shoes, and they are fitted with a pair of shoes. Chuck Gustafson, the manager out there, does this himself. And so it's just been a real effective program, and then NAMI Kenosha buys the shoes. And so far we've had at least 105, 110 people that have done this, and it's been effective.
What a great idea.
The Navy YMCA Wellness Program, here's another program that started out very small, and we wanted to take a caseworker and maybe five or six of the clients from the community support program and go out to the Y. And so initially they would go in a group. They would go from, maybe they went to swim, shoot some hoops, walk around the track. The YMCA has been very, very supportive of this. They show people how to use the equipment. And so now, I don't know, 3 or 4 years later, we've got 326 people in the program.
Wow.
And we buy, NAMI Kenosha buys group plans, and they get on a sign-in list. They come in. It's right on a bus line. So instead of having a group, folks can go out there independently. So it really helps in their recovery to give them more independence. And it's worked, and we just really, really appreciate. Thank you very much to the YMCA and all the support in making this go.
No kidding. For those of you just joining us, we're speaking with Jack Rose, who is the co-president of the Kenosha County chapter of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. A second and very important a facet of what NAMI does is supporting those who are living with this reality. And I know you have in particular something that involves kind of an ongoing offering that can make a really, really big difference for family members and those directly suffering from mental illness.
Yes, and that's our support program. We have support programs on the second and fourth Thursday of every month at St. Paul's Lutheran Church, which is on the corner of 39th Avenue and 88th Street. And so this has been key. We have three different support sessions. We have one for adults living with mental illness, we have one for family and friends, and we have one for adolescents. And they have been very effective. And it's interesting, the numbers have been going up, I would say, over the last year or 2 years as far as people attending. And we have new people that are coming in. We have people that they have been there and they continue. The support group is also a source of people that attend our family to family. They get the support, you know, the family and friends, and they want to continue it. In our effort to expand west of the interstate, we're also starting a support group for family and friends at the County Center building out on 45 and 50. And the next session there is going to be October 12th, which is the second Thursday in October, and it'll be in the morning from 9 a.m. to 10:30. So we're going to see if we can get more of the people out in the western part of our county to attend the support sessions. But it has been very, very effective.
Right. That's an important reminder that although for some reason we might tend to think of mental illness as something that occurs in big cities and metropolitan areas and urban centers, and that there's no reason whatsoever to think about it only in those situations, in small towns, people living on farms and other rural areas of America. This is just as powerful a reality, and in probably in some ways perhaps even more difficult in terms of ongoing care, maybe being a little more difficult to access and so on.
Yeah, exactly, because it's the education piece that people become more aware of, you know, by going to these support sessions, and it happens. It touches one in four of us, and right now only about 4 out of 10 have access to the requisite treatment.
Hmm.
So we've got to do a better job on that, and we're trying. And right. So we're trying to get people plugged in.
And that, of course, brings us to the third and final facet of NAMI's work, namely that of advocacy. And tell us the most important ways in which NAMI works to advocate for the mentally ill in terms of trying to change our code of law and other matters to make life better for the mentally ill and those who love them.
I think there are a couple of ways we do it. We have representation on the Chapter 51 committee, emergency detentions. We have representation on the mental health committee out at the Kenosha County Detention Center. We have a seat in Judge Wagner's program for judicial efforts in the community. Mm. And we can do this. And again, it's about educating these different people. Another interesting thing that we started back in 2005, and that's we have a public forum for people that are running for circuit court judges.
Hmm.
And we generally hold it at St. Paul's Lutheran Church, but we get the candidates, they come in, and we have a series of questions and just to see how they answer. And it's an open forum and it's open to the public. So you get a chance to see where the candidates sit with respect to mental health issues. And so that has been quite effective. Another thing that we've done this year, and that is we've gone out to the Kenosha County Detention Center, and they have a 12-week program for their jail staff, an in-service.
Hmm.
And so this year we were able to have a two-hour session on mental health awareness for the jail staff.
Hmm.
And they need it. They are not psychiatrists nor psychologists, but they see people with mental health issues daily.
Right.
And so we can give those folks a better toolkit. And we've also had some of the jail staff come through our crisis intervention partner training. And I think that this is so important. Another thing on advocacy, and I think we're seeing more and more of this in the media, and that is people that are living with a mental illness come forward and tell her story.
Hmm.
And I think we had an excellent example at our mental health awareness vigil this past May, where the 2017 Miss Kenosha, Caitlin Ray, told her story. She was our keynote speaker. And this is the first time that she had told her story in public.
Hmm.
I mean, it was incredible. And her living with depression.
Wow.
And the results of that. So I think these are the ways that we can advocate. I think another very important way, and we've done this over the years, and that is to really advocate for the mental health portion of the county budget. This pays the bills, and I think the Kenosha County Human Services, the county exec, have been very, very supportive of mental health in our community, and this makes all the difference. Mm. So these are some of the things that we have tried to do. Bridges Community Center, two more things. Bridges Community Center has been a very effective recovery center, and they're open from Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 4:30, and then Saturday from 9 to 1. And so this is an expansion of hours where people can go, and they can go to different support sessions, different educational sessions, and it's worked very well. And it's a program under the Kenosha Human Development Services, very, very effective. And so, we will continue to do that. One other thing, too, that we have been advocates of, and you may have heard it in the past, but there is a shortage of mental health professionals across the board, not everywhere, okay? And so we have been really promoting our Grow Our Own from the community. And here within the last couple of years, we had an opportunity, and Steve Relish, a longtime NAMI member, has been very, very, very effective in doing this. But we have Martha Hollowell scholarships now. And so we have our first three students that have received a scholarship for $7,500. And they're from the community, and they're going to come back to the community to work. Mm. And one thing that has really helped on that is that Marquette University has offered a Master of Science in Nursing, which can result in an advanced practice nurse, and they are available right here in Pleasant Prairie.
Wow.
And that just started in September of this year. So that's another thing we're advocating for. Mm. Okay.
So anything else we need to know about NAMI and your tireless efforts on behalf of all of these issues?
Well, I think that just to let people know it's out there. We're a phone call away. If we don't get the call, and 605-9038, it'll get you started. And I think it's so important. We have also been very supportive of the Oxford House program in Kenosha. And Jane Davis has done just a fantastic job coordinating the houses. We have three here in Kenosha and one in Racine. And so it goes back to the first Oxford House, which started in 2010 for women, Oxford House Lena, Oxford House Heirs for men. And then in 2012, we started Oxford House Lena. And here recently, we've started one more in February 1st of 2016 for men. And so these are recovery centers. And what that means, it's a home and the members run the house. Mm. And so there are rules of the road. They drop UAs if they're dirty. They're out. And so many times we're finding people with mental illness also have a drug problem or vice versa, chicken or egg, what comes first.
Right.
And many times if they have the mental illness, they will start self-medicating. And that results in that drug addiction. And so I'm sure you're well aware of the opioid really epidemic that we have in our country. And it's also right here in Kenosha. You've heard some of the different drugs and this fentanyl drug, very, very deadly. And we had, the last data I have, we had 32 OD deaths so far this year, from last month. 12 of those have been related to the fentanyl. Mm. And that's very, very serious. So I think these programs, like Oxford House, that we have that can help the people. I know sitting on the treatment court program here in Kenosha County, many of the people that are in there, the clients, they need a place to live. And so this has afforded them an opportunity, structure, and it's worked. So we continue, we promoted the Oxford House when they first came to town. We continue to promote them. It's a great, great resource.
Wow. A lot has changed, of course, since mental illness first became a reality for you and your family. And, of course, it's gratifying to see that there is much more openness
yes.
than there once was, although by no means is it yet where we need it to be. There's still stigma attached, still shame or embarrassment that sometimes keeps people from, first of all, speaking about this and also openly seeking help.
Right. And I think going back to, you know, this is Mental Illness Awareness Week. We like to think about it as mental health awareness, but the title is Mental Illness Awareness Week, and it's I'm into mental health, inspired, informed, involved. And so I think this is what I would urge your listeners to do. And as you said, I just hope during this Mental Illness Awareness Week that you can join NAMI Kenosha in shining a light on mental illness and replacing stigma with hope. We need to keep trying to go forward, keep our eye on the target.
So remind our listeners, anybody who feels like they would like to contact the local chapter of NAMI, either because they directly need help or because maybe they want to offer help to the organization, how do they contact you?
Right. You can, donations, you can send them to NAMI Kenosha County, P.O. Box 631, Kenosha, Wisconsin, 53141. If you have any questions relating to NAMI, you can call 605-9038. And please, I urge everyone to check out our website, NAMIKenosha.org. Chris Cohn, our webmaster, has done a fantastic job. She's a member of our board, and so please check us out. And we look for your support.
And what is that address again?
The NAMIKenosha.org.
Jack Rose, co-president. Jack, thank you so much. It's always great to speak with you, and we thank you for all of the hard work that you have done on behalf of NAMI. Best wishes to you.
Thank you very much, Greg.
We finish out today's morning show with an excerpt from an interview I recorded back in 2014 with ABC News journalist Dan Harris, highly regarded in the industry, but also famous for an on-air panic attack which occurred in June of 2004. His memoir about the experience of trying to regain his mental and emotional health is called 10% Happier, How I Tamed the Voice in My Head, Reduced Stress Without Losing My Edge, and Found Self-Help That Really Works, A True Story. Dan Harris talks in his book about how his father had said many, many times, the price of security is insecurity. I asked him how that played out in his own life.
I mean, I had always operated under the thesis that the only way to succeed is to worry a lot and to be pretty anxious. And I think a lot of successful people embrace this philosophy, either consciously or subconsciously, that, you know, you got to be just stressed out all the time. And the adventure in the book is really my trying to find a way to remain successful and maintain my professional edge while being happier and less stressed out. And so where I've come down on this is that there's such a thing as constructive anguish. You know, we need to be stressed out to a certain extent, but we tend to make it worse than it needs to be. And I've gotten a little bit better over time at reducing the needless rumination.
Yeah, you mentioned this much later in the book when you're right in the middle of sort of this quest to find some happiness, some inner peace. But the concern continues to sort of raise its head that you don't want to do something that is going to, in a sense, disable you as a journalist. You pose the question to yourself at one point when you're being told all these blessings that await you if you live a more mindful life, where you wonder, wait a minute, isn't there a practical value to disquiet? I mean, you're posing the question there that if somebody gets too peaceful and everything's just fine, in a sense, aren't you disabling some of the tools which are most valuable for you as an inquisitive journalist?
And I think it's a valid question. I think it's a question a lot of people have, which is, you know, don't I need my stress in order to succeed? Isn't this what propels me forward. To a certain extent, insecurity, my worrying, my anxiety. And my answer is yes, actually. I don't know if a lot of self-help gurus will tell you this, but yes, I actually do think you need to be, you can't, you know, float off into cosmic goo and just, you know, be completely ineffective and not care about what's happening in the world. But again, you got to draw the line between when is the stress useful and when is it, self-destructive and making you unhappy and unpleasant to be around. And, you know, what I found is a way to kind of, to a certain extent, draw that line effectively.
Hmm. I especially appreciate in the book how you describe so effectively, so vividly, the experience that probably a lot of people have, even if they're not a well-known journalist whose face is seen on television, namely the fact that success can sometimes be a breeder of more anxiety. And you describe, as you received some big breaks at ABC News at a pretty young age and were, in a sense, climbing the ladder, but you write, perversely, my good fortune meant I now had that much more to lose and thus that much more to protect. And I'm sure that that's especially true when you are in a very competitive arena like television journalism.
Yeah, but I think it's true for everybody. I mean, the universality here is that our minds are insatiable. And it's not just about our careers. That when are we ever fully satisfied? Think about it. How many vacations, good meals, social encounters, romantic encounters have we had in our lives? And are we done yet? No, we still want more because the mind is never truly satisfied. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is human nature. And having a collision with that reality is, I think, a very healthy thing in the sense of the first step is admitting it. And I do think that actually admitting that you are never satisfied is a profound step, a really profound step. It doesn't mean that you stop pushing forward. It means that you can push forward with a certain amount of wisdom.
Right. We're speaking with ABC News' Dan Harris and talking about his really interesting book called 10% Happier. So much of your quest to be happier, or at least a little bit happier, revolves around your relationship with this voice inside your head, what you came to understand is your ego, your inner narrator. And one of the things which you came to describe as you sort of first explored this is, you said, I always assumed that the voice in my head was me, my ghostly internal anchorman, hosting the coverage of my life. And you realized that this voice inside your head wasn't exactly me, and that your ego was really stirring up a lot of trouble for you.
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, it's a universal thing. Whether we're aware of it or not, our lives revolve around this nonstop conversation we're having with ourselves. We all have an inner voice, and I'm not talking about schizophrenia here. I'm talking about the voice that chases you out of bed in the morning and is yammering at you all day long and has you constantly wanting things or not wanting things, judging yourself very harshly, judging other people, comparing yourself to other people, and here's one of the hallmarks, spending a lot of time thinking about the past or the future instead of focusing on what's happening right now. And when you're unaware of this voice, It yanks you around. I mean, this is why we have our hand in the fridge when we're not hungry, or we're yelling at people when it's not in our best interest, or we're checking our BlackBerry when our children are trying to talk to us or whatever. And for me, it was what led to that most embarrassing moment of my life on national television. It was what led me to go to war zones without thinking about the consequences psychologically, to come home and get depressed and not really even be fully aware that I was depressed, and then to blindly self-medicate, all of which blew up on my face on national television. So I just think that we're now talking about a central feature of human life that is all too often in our culture not really clearly articulated to us.
Right. Well, and you came to realize, in your words, you had to confront the fact that the thing I'd always thought of as my greatest asset, my internal cattle prod, was also perhaps my greatest liability. Your book is the story of your journey of sorting much of this out. And what makes your book, what gives it a wonderful, refreshing, unique flavor, is that you explore various paths in the so-called sort of self-help world, and you speak about it really honestly. And you're not afraid to kind of talk about the way in which some of these efforts came up short or were not the full answer for you. And I wonder if you could just say a word about your decision to describe this journey that you took so honestly and to speak so frankly about people that did help you but didn't completely help you, or made sense to you but didn't completely make sense to you. I mean, we don't really hear this stuff described very often in this really honest, frank way.
Well, I mean, I'll say two things about that. Well, I'll say three things. First, thank you. The second thing I'll say is that in terms of being critical of some of the self-help gurus I came across, you know, part of that was a no-brainer. I mean, I found a lot of what I discovered in America's self-help subculture to be, frankly, repellent and destructive. I think telling people you can solve all of your problems through the power of positive thinking is not helpful. And in many ways, can be damaging because it's not true. There are no magic bullets. And I think, you know, I think we're ready for a more mature discussion about happiness in America, which is why I called the book 10% Happy. And then, in terms of just being honest throughout the book, I'm really honest. And I mean, I no longer have any skeletons in my closet because they're all in the damn book. And I anguished over that for years. I mean, it took me 4 years to write the book. And I, you know, there were times when I thought it was going to destroy my reputation, destroy my career, and just be a permanent embarrassment. But as it turns out, you know, I've learned something very humbling and liberating, which is that people aren't that interested in me. These secrets that I thought were so heavy are kind of like mildly interesting to everybody else. Like, oh, okay, well, Harris is a screw up like the rest of us. Oh, fine. What people really want to know is, what did you learn that can be of use to me? And that is, as I said, a liberating and humbling realization to me, which is it's liberating in that I think I can be honest and not risk being judged in a crippling way, and humbling because I think that, you know, everybody's the star of their own movie, and mostly what they want to know, what do you got for me?
Hmm. Well, and it probably helps that we're not living in the world of Walter Cronkite anymore, and it's hard to imagine somebody like Walter Cronkite writing a book of this self-revelatory, in a sense, and now we're in an era of new openness. You have ultimately, of course, come to realize that meditation is going to play a huge role in giving you what you need. And what's so interesting about that is that you are not the typical person who subscribes to the value of meditation. And in a sense, what you're kind of saying is, you are, as not a particularly spiritually minded person to start with, if meditation can be helpful to you, it can be helpful to just about anybody.
Oh man, I am the least obvious meditator, perhaps on planet Earth. I mean, I was raised in the People's Republic of Massachusetts by a pair of skeptical scientists. I had a bar mitzvah, but only for the money. So like there was no religion in my upbringing, my view of meditation was that it was for freaks and for weirdos and people who live in yurts and are really into aromatherapy and Cat Stevens and Ultimate Frisbee, and there was no way I was going to do it. But what turned me around was the science. There is an explosion of research that strongly suggests that meditation has an almost laughably long list of benefits, like lowering your blood pressure, boosting your immune system, and literally rewiring key parts of your brain in ways that reduce your stress and boost your happiness. And boost, by the way, your kindness. And when I heard about that, and when I heard that meditation doesn't require believing in anything or sitting in a funny position or wearing special outfits or chanting or anything like that, I decided to give it a try, just like for 5 minutes a day. And I found that it had, a significant benefit on my life. Did it solve all of my problems? Is my life a nonstop parade of unicorns and rainbows? No. But I stand by the estimate of 10% happier.
Hmm. It's a marvelous book, and I hope lots of people will seek it out. 10% Happier, How I Tamed the Voice in My Head, Reduced Stress Without Losing My Edge, and Found Self-Help That Actually Works. A very refreshing, honest book, published by It Books, by ABC's Dan Harris. Mr. Harris, I wish you happiness and peace and all else that you desire for your life, and I thank you for writing this really marvelous book.
And right back at you, and thank you for such thoughtful questions and for having me on. I appreciate it.